Hello and welcome into the KE Report. I'm your host, Chad Markwitz, and I'm talking today with Dave Kranzler, fund manager and publisher of the Mining Stock Journal and the Short Sellers Journal. And Dave, it's great to get you on the show here at the KE Report just to get your thoughts on these wild and turbulent markets. I know after a couple decades of managing a fund and publishing your different reports, you've seen a lot of volatility, but this is probably getting to one of those areas where a lot of people are in uncharted territories. We're seeing the commodities almost across the board race higher, whether it's oil and gas, the precious metals, the base metals, the agricultural products, and we're seeing a lot of market turbulence. What's your general takeaway at the point we're at with this geopolitical tension and inflationary pressures? Where do you think we're at in the markets?
Well, first of all, thanks for having me back on, Chad. I appreciate it. The way that the sector has kind of shot up, I think, has taken a lot of us a bit by surprise. You know, and anyone who's been in this sector since, you know, March 2020, there's a lot of people who jumped in because I had a big influx of new subscribers back then, hasn't seen a market that's quite like this. Well, I guess gold kind of shot up like this in, call it just June and July of 2020. But it feels more like kind of the post-2008 great financial crisis, QE started run up in the sector. And we also had a run up that was kind of similar to this between late 2005 and May 2006. So, I mean, I think we were going to have a run up like this eventually, regardless of whether or not the Ukraine situation happened. Certainly that was a catalyst that pulled it forward. But at some point, the degree to which the Fed and you know, essentially central banks globally have been devaluing fiat currency through money printing. And it's not just money printing, it's also sovereign debt issuance and other credit type products and derivative products that kind of transform printed currency into, you know, they can leverage that and create these products, which is essentially the same effect as printing even more money until those credit products and derivatives get repaid. So I think eventually we were going to see a move like this. And, you know, obviously the Ukraine shock is what caused it. And it's caused it across the board, obviously, in all the commodities.
Yeah, it's interesting to make the parallel also to that time period coming out of the great financial crisis in 2008 and 2009. You had this disarray in the world order and this fear. And I'd say after having 2 years of this pandemic and government lockdowns, followed by this Ukraine situation where it could be disrupting supply chains even further, it's really escalated any of the moves that people were expecting for financial reasons or due to the money printing and due to the fiscal and monetary policy, and really has moved things into high gear quicker than some would have liked to have seen, probably. The question will be how much air comes out of the balloon if we do get a resolution to the political situation, and how much of this strength in commodities and in particular in the precious metals do you think is stickier, Dave? Do you think we'll see prices at least correct from a higher level and hold these levels and then still keep trucking higher, or what's your outlook there?
I mean, that's the $64,000 question. I think if and when this geopolitical exogenous shock subsides, if it subsides, I think it probably will at some point. You know, we'll definitely get a knee-jerk sell-off reaction. I'm looking at a long-term monthly chart right now, but if you look at a, you know, just a shorter-term daily chart, all these things have been going parabolic and parabolic moves, as tech stock investors have found out the hard way, especially the newly minted ones since March 2020 on their Robinhood apps. Parabolic moves don't keep going forever. They eventually correct or pull back, or sometimes you get a massive sell-off if it's, you know, if even part of the move isn't justified, which I think the case can be made with tech stocks. But I think we were going to get a move like this regardless, and the Ukraine situation kind of triggered it and pulled it forward. So yeah, at some point you're going to get profit taking, you're going to get momentum chasers and hedge fund algos, as we were chatting about earlier, they're going to turn around and become sellers. And then it's just a question of how far down they're able to push it. But I still believe that the fundamental factors justify, and I'm not speaking towards all commodities. I focus on the monetary metals, which are gold and silver. So, you know, obviously people have been asking me about, oh, what do you think about wheat? Or what do you think about nickel stocks? And I'm just like, look, I can't speak intelligently on that. I don't know those markets because I don't study them. I'd rather kind of have as deep a knowledge as possible in just the precious metal sector than to try and like become a generalist across the board. So, but I can say that certainly the fundamental conditions from a macro standpoint, monetary policy, fiscal policy, you know, what's happening with price inflation, certainly justify a much higher price of gold. And then, you know, we're not even introducing the idea of the price suppression in gold and silver, which if that fails, I mean, you could see $2,500 gold by the end of the summer.
Yeah, and I think that when we look at something just as a parallel, without dwelling on it too long, something like nickel that just busted up through it, that was really because of a short squeeze unfolding where there were so many people that had sometimes legitimate shorts because they were producers and they were hedging their production, but it's really created ripple. That's why nickel is now halted today. But we saw the same thing happen in palladium. There's really not a big cartel trying to keep the price of palladium down, and as a result, it ripped higher. It was up over $3,000 earlier today. And so when you see those kind of moves, when the dam finally breaks, there can be a pretty quick upside move. And we could see the same thing in gold and silver, especially I think maybe even more so in silver than gold. But even despite, you know, where prices are at right now, I'd still say gold near an all-time high. It's above 2,000, and silver in the, you know, the 26 to 27 range is still a healthy price for producers. It's still a pretty good price for the sector. And honestly, Dave, if we took a time machine back a couple years ago and said, hey, in the future, inflation will be about 7.5, pushing 8% by the government statistics, by the CPI numbers, double digits in real terms, and there'll be a global lockdown, there will be martial law, people in Canada will be seizing people's bank accounts and taking their and freezing a funds, we'll be in a Russia-NATO war. And guess what? Even with all this, gold price would only be slightly higher than it was back at the 2011 peak. I think a lot of people in the past would have a challenge understanding why gold hasn't moved higher, why silver hasn't moved higher. And I just wonder at this point, well, all things considered, with the fiscal and monetary pressures, with inflationary pressures, with the geopolitical backdrop, do you think even if there is a brief correction, if there's a resolution in Ukraine and the sector does pull back, do you think longer term from a macro standpoint that gold and silver can keep grinding higher here?
I think there's extreme tightness and illiquidity building in the financial system, at least the European and U.S. financial system. And every time that something that's happened and some of these indicators like the MOVE index have spiked up the way they've spiked up, it precedes the Fed having to print more money because the banks are getting squeezed on their asset side. Assets are starting to deteriorate. And that's what we saw starting in September 2019 when the Fed started its supposed alleged temporary repo program that turned into a permanent repo QE program, right? We could be entering into another period like that. So it's going to be interesting to see. I think it's next week the FOMC meets. It'll be interesting to see how they address, you know, what's going on now, if they're going to stick to that. I mean, a 25 basis rate hike, it's meaningless. It's nothing. If they really want to try and control price inflation and currency devaluation, they got to start shrinking the balance sheet and removing all this liquidity from the system. So, you know, a 25 basis point rate hike isn't going to do anything to real inflation. I mean, I don't know if they'll rig the CPI to show inflation calming down after a whopping 25 basis point interest rate hike, but it won't do anything to tame real inflation.
I think that's a great point, Dave, and a point we've made on the show a number of times, that even if the Fed were to hike 4 to 6 times as some imagined, or even if you're listening to Jamie Dimon at JP Morgan, they think there's going to be 7 or 8 hikes. Irregardless, even if they hiked it up 4 times or 8 times and got it to a 1 or 2% Fed funds rates, that would probably move the you know, the 10-year to 3.5-4%. That still pales in comparison to the rate of inflation we're seeing, and it's not going to tame inflation. I think a lot of people that were market pundits or people that were listening to the Fed's transitory message were hoping over time the supply chain issues would get worked out and the base effect would be over and that we would see inflation come back down. But we've seen just the opposite. What we've seen is the real result of money printing and the real result of all the spending has caused prices to inflate. And this was, again, all happening before the political situation. So if the Fed starts their rate hiking cycle and they move it up, even if they did 1% rate hikes and did 4 in a row and got a 4% Fed fund rate, we'd still have negative real rates. So do you think that negative real rate environment will still be a boon to the precious metal sector?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if you go by John Williams' inflation calculation, which he recalculates the CPI using the methodology they used in 1990 and also in 1980, and the 1981 shows inflation running north of 15%. So if you're at 4% or 5% on the Fed funds rate, you're still at a negative 10% negative real interest rate. And you might be able to fool a lot of the market, a majority of the market and a lot of people with that, but you're not going to fool the gold and silver market.
Well, one other thing that we should probably discuss, Dave, is the mining stocks. And I guess a lot of the people in the sector are a little bummed out that maybe their junior stock hasn't started running yet, or that even the seniors haven't had as big of a performance as one would expect at these higher metal prices. Again, if we took a time machine back and told people, hey, gold will be over 2,000, silver will be in the mid-20s, a lot of people would have expected the stocks to have ripped a lot higher, because generally people are in those for the outperformance, for that upside torque that it gives you to the metals prices. For example, today gold got near an all-time high, and GDX and GDXJ are essentially flat. Same with SIL and SILJ. They're really either barely up to flat for the day. One would have expected a little more action in the mining stocks. How are you looking at it from a big picture view as far as the different areas, the majors, the developers, the explorers? What has your attention at this point?
Well, first, let's start with this idea that the sector hasn't moved as high as people might, their expectations might be set for. And I can't help the fact that these aren't, tech stocks that blind idiots just throw their life savings into, and start playing the greater fool game. But since January 28th, the GDX ETF is up 31%. So that's what, five and a half weeks? I mean, if the Nasdaq went up 31% in 5.5 weeks, they'd be doing naked cartwheels on CNBC, right? So, a lot of that's been powered by the larger cap stocks. And if you have a when you have a healthy move in the sector, and I'm not saying, I mean, this GDX chart's gone parabolic, and I'm not saying it's necessarily healthy technically, but you could also say, well, hey, this is correcting years of price suppression in the precious metals. But typically when we've had periods where we've had sustainable long-term rallies, it's always been gold moves up first, and then the largest large cap miners move up. Like if you look at the stocks that make up the HUI index or the XAU index, those stocks have outperformed the sector since, just call it, since the end of January. But I mean, really, GDX has been moving higher since the end of September 2021. So, when I'm talking about stocks like Gold Fields, AngloGold Ashanti, those types of stocks, not necessarily the super well-known names like Newmont and Barrick. I mean, that's what every large fund manager plays. Oh yeah, I own mining stocks, I own Barrick. And then you start to see the mid-cap stocks, which the GDX index kind of captures, GDXJ captures it a little bit better. And GDXJ has not performed quite as well as GDX, but we would kind of expect that. But then those stocks started kicking in, and now some of the juniors, I mean, like yesterday, US gold was up 17%. The Silver Viper, I think, was up something like 10%. There was a bunch of micro cap junior exploration stocks that were up double digits. And that's kind of what you expect to see in terms of the way the capital flows into the sector. First gold, then large caps, then mid caps, then the junior, I call them junior venture capital stocks, and then silver. I mean, at one point today, silver was up almost 7%, and that was more than double what gold was up. So, again, that's usually the precursor to a longer term sustainable move, as opposed to what we saw in the beginning of 2016. And that move went until July 2016. And then also in mid-May 2020 until that move went to mid-August 2020. And what happened was all the momentum chasers and extreme speculators piled into the juniors. I mean, there were juniors that were up 300, 400% between March 2020 and August 2020. I had some in my portfolio. And that was the same thing in the January to July 2016 move. So this one has, to me, it has a better character to it. Again, I'm a little leery of the fact that it's gone somewhat parabolic, but obviously there's exogenous circumstances that have that have kind of driven that. And I think when those exogenous circumstances back down, we'll get a pullback. But I think you use that pullback to add to your positions. As we were talking earlier, I actually flattened out my PM thinking we'd get a pullback on Monday, which we didn't get. And I started taking profits in my fund yesterday and this morning. Not big profits, but, you know, names that I loaded up on just 2 or 3 weeks ago, you know, names like U.S. Gold that had been just hit really hard, and the sell-off was not justified in any way, shape, or form by fundamentals or news.
Yeah, we definitely have seen some catch-up in the mining stocks recently. I guess my question earlier was more about over the last, you know, year and a half, let's just say 18 months since that August 2020 peak, a lot of the mining stocks were still at a pretty good level from a metals price perspective, but they just underperformed. But they've definitely caught back up recently and started to catch up to where they were, you know, at that time period. And we do see the larger cap stocks move first. We see the producers and royalty companies move first, especially the majors, because that's where the generalist money rotates first. Then it gets into the mid caps. Then we start seeing it trickle down into the development plays and the exploration plays. At this point, though, if we do see that corrective move, if we see some air come out of the balloon, if we see maybe a little resolution on this Ukraine, and we see metals prices, you know, maybe pull back a little bit, and we see a related pullback in the mining stocks, it sounds like you're saying, Dave, that you would see that as an opportunity to reload positions, or, you know, maybe add another tranche to positions, because you would think that longer term, even if there is a pullback in the short term, it'd be a good buying opportunity. Is that the way I'm understanding it?
Yes. And actually, to your point, you're right. I mean, the mining stocks really, since the kind of the mini bear market we had between late 2011 and the end of 2015, you're right. The mining stocks never kept up with gold and silver. And if you look at just, say, GDX relative to the price of gold and run that chart going all the way back to the year 2000, I mean, GDX is about as cheap as it's ever been, which means the mining stocks, you know, by extension, are as cheap relative to the prices of gold and silver as they've been since the secular bull market in the sector began in late 2000, early 2001.
Well, it's going to be interesting to follow along, Dave. We'll wrap it up here for today. I appreciate getting your thoughts on the precious metals markets, on the general markets, and the crazy turbulence we're seeing. And I like the enthusiasm you have for the medium to longer term in the sector still. And if there is a corrective move, I think a lot of people that maybe missed this recent move up will be coming off the sidelines with a little bit of capital. And maybe this recent episode on the global stage has given people another reason to take a second look at the precious metals. So we'll keep following along. We appreciate you coming on the show, Dave, and looking forward to our next conversation.
That sounds great, Chad. Thanks for having me on.